The following shiur has been delivered by Dayan Yosef Greenwald, Dayan at the Beit Avad. For more information or shiurim, please visit theshc.org or call 1-844-200-TSHC. That's 1-844-200-8742.
Perhaps the most painful and hard to understand episode in the whole of Torah is the tragedy of Mechirat Yosef, where the brothers, the great tzaddikim, the Shiftei Kar, sold their brother to slavery. Ultimately, they decided to kill him, and they ultimately sold him off to slavery, where he rose to become king, and the truth was revealed to them later on after they came to get food. And this week's parasha, we have to grapple with understanding the reality of this Mechirat Yosef. There's very little that we can understand, but one thing we know to be true. If we look at the brothers as being guilty because of jealousy and destroying, assassinating, selling off their brother, then we're missing the basics of this whole sefer. Later on in the parasha, when Yosef is tempted in the house of Potiphar, in the island of immorality that he was sold to, he's tempted with the sin of immorality. So Rashi brings from Chazal that his father appears to him and says to him, the Gemara tells us, that if you sin, your brothers who are tzaddikim are going to have their names inscribed on the breastplate, on the choshen of the Kohen Gadol. That was the source of illumination, of divine illumination for the Jewish nation. That source are the names of the Shvatim, of the 12 brothers. Their names, because they're perfect tzaddikim, will be there. If you fall, if you sin, your name won't be there. Wait a second, they're sinners. He's a sinner in immorality, chalila, if he sins. And they're sinners because they're willing to destroy a brother because of petty jealousy. They're willing to assassinate their very own flesh and blood. What makes them not sinners? It's clear in the Chazal that they're not. And the Chazal sure enough tell us that there was a psak din. They decided, they paskin after due deliberation, that Yosef was a morid b'malchut. He was in a state of rebellion against the leadership of Yehuda. They knew that the one who ultimately will be the melech, who has the status of a melech over them, is Yehuda. Yosef challenged that leadership role, and he was taking a leadership role. He got the ketonet pasim from his father. They felt that he was in direct violation of submitting to authority. So not submitting to authority on a kingly level in Klal Yisrael is a sin that's guilty of death. And they paskin based on that, and their psak was affirmed by none other than HaKadosh Baruch Hu Kiviyachol Ba'atzmo. How do we know that? Because the Svarim tell us that the Asara Harugei Malchut, those 10 great and holy sages that were killed by the Romans, we say in the Tefillah, on Yom Kippurim, they were killed for the sin of Mechirat Yosef to be Mechaper. Who are the 10? The Svarim tell us, who are the 10? The 10 brothers, the 10 great sages were Mechaper on the 10 brothers. Who are the 10 brothers? Yosef obviously wasn't guilty. Binyamin wasn't there. Reuven wasn't there because he had gone to serve his father, Rashi tells us in this week's parasha. There were 9 brothers there. HaKadosh Baruch Hu Ba'atzmo Hiskim Imahem, and Kiviyachol, on some sublime level, HaKadosh Baruch Hu needs a kapara. Connected that is Rabbi Akiva. That's why the Gemara tells us that Rabbi Akiva is the height of Chazal, because he was the one who was considered worthy enough to be, so to speak, in the place of HaKadosh Baruch Hu Ba'atzmo. Clearly, we don't have over here a vicious plot to kill an insubordinate. We don't have over here a vicious, petty fight between various power struggle that ends in some assassination and throwing a rival overboard. We're talking over here about a psak and about Ratzon Hashem on the highest level. Yitzchak Avinu, Rashi says, knew also what happened. He didn't say a word to Yaakov Avinu. He also knew what happened, which means he also agreed. Obviously, on some deeper cosmic level of existence, the plan was supposed to be that Yosef was supposed to have a leadership role. We know that ultimately, we don't understand what that means exactly, ultimately the tikkun, ha'olam, will unfold Mashiach ben Yosef, Mashiach ben David. There has to be a preliminary stage, there's a leadership role for Yosef. Ultimately, the ultimate leadership, the ultimate glory of HaKadosh Baruch Hu will be revealed in the kingship of Yehuda, of Mashiach ben David. They knew about that. They didn't understand that there was another level, there was something that they weren't able to see. It's a mystery within a mystery. And because of that, the Pesach was considered right and real and just on a level that they understood. On some level that was hidden from them, there was a mistake, and that's why it needs a kapara. Let's have that as a basic framework to discuss. What I'd like to do is spend a few minutes discussing a fascinating halachic discussion that takes place in the realm, in the context of a discussion as the brothers were deliberating what to do with Yosef. The original psak that was rendered was to kill him. That's what should be done to a morid b'malchut. Comes along Reuven. And Reuven says, in Pasuk Chavbet, Vayome alem Reuven al tishpuchu dam. Don't spill his blood, at least not with your own hands. Hashlichu oto el abor hazeh asher bamidbar, v'yad al tishlichu vo. A hand should not be stretched forth to kill him. The reason why he said it is because he had in mind, leman hatzil oto miyadam lashivo el aviv, but what he presented to his brothers was, let's at least not kill him outright. Let's put him in the bor and let's let him die himself. Says the Ramban in his Pirush al Torah that limedotam, that I'm reading the very end of the piece, she'en onesh hagorem ka'onesh hashofech dam biyadav. The punishment that's given to somebody who causes something is called a grama. Somebody who causes a misa, somebody who causes a death, is not the same thing as somebody who spills that blood on his own. Later on, when Yehuda comes along, Yehuda says, why put him in the bar? Let's pull him out of the bar. Let's sell him. Why didn't Yehuda agree if he's chayav misa, if he should be punished? Why not just put him in the bar? So the Ramban explains over there, and this is the Ramban in Pasuk Chavav, Vine Reuven limid lahem shel yishpuchu dam biyadam, that they shouldn't do it with their own hands. Al yashlichu babor v'yamut sham, because it should be a gorem. Comes along Yehuda, and Yehuda says no. If you caused it, you did it. And if you caused it, you did it. It's as if you did it. Says the Ramban, in summary, Vidina Rabba, Vidina Zuta Ikebenayo, their dispute was about, should the lesser din, the lesser onesh, be incurred, or the greater onesh be incurred? Ushneim Amru Emet. They were both right on some level. Which means that Yehuda and Reuven had a dispute whether putting him in the bor was a lesser form of evil than killing him biyadayim. Yehuda said it's all the same thing. So if you want to get away from killing him biyadayim, you have to sell him to slavery. And Reuven said put him in the bar would take care of that problem. Now let's ask ourselves, let's take a step back. Again, we said that clearly HaKadosh Baruch Hu was maskim, they're perfect tzaddikim, they did what was right in their eyes and right in the eyes of the Torah. So why are they looking for a lesser onesh? If it should be done, it should be done. And if they have qualms, so then don't do it at all. A bedin that's not sure about their psak can't carry it out. So either they stood behind their words or they didn't. What is the din of somebody who only causes somebody else to be killed? He only hires an assassin. He doesn't do the actual pulling the trigger himself. The halakha is maybe Bezdin won't kill him in the times of the Beis HaMikdash, but he's certainly guilty of having caused an innocent man's death. So, did they feel it was justified or not? Was it the right thing to kill him or not? And what would help that instead of being on the level of the hitman, they're only on the level of an Italian mafioso that hires that hitman? Are we talking about the same shvatim, tzadikim, perfect tzadikim that their names are on the choshen, on the source of Ruach HaKodesh? What's going on over here? Before we answer that, let's delve a little bit into the halachic underpinnings of what we just said. Somebody puts somebody or something in a situation where a certain end result is guaranteed. But he didn't do it in a straightforward way. The Gemara in Sanhedrin Dafayin Zayin tells us that there's a difference between a person who ties somebody down, an assassin ties somebody down in a place where the sun is beating. He ties him down that he can't move, knowing beyond the shadow of a doubt that in an hour he's going to be dead of heat stroke. What happens if he ties him down in a place where the sun is not shining? What he does know is that since the sun rises, barring the end of time, every day for the last 5,700-odd years, the sun's been rising and setting, and it follows a certain course. He knows that the sun will get here in an hour, and the person, instead of dying in an hour, will die in 2 hours. The Gemara says that there's a chiluk between the two. One is considered a maisa biyodayim, one is considered an act of ritzicha, an act of murder, which carries with it the death penalty. One is considered a grama, where the Gemara tells us, let's say in the context of causing an accident, causing financial damage to somebody, that grama is patur bedine adam, bedin only works with what's direct. If somebody doesn't crash into somebody else's car, I'm saying over the case in our terminology, but it's really the equivalency of what the Gemara in Bava Kamma tells us in Bava Kamma Daf Nun Vav, about somebody who goes head on with somebody, and because of that the other person has to swerve and he crashes in. Is it your fault? Yes, it's your fault. The same way if you crashed into him, it's your fault. If you go at him and because of that he has to swerve the last second to avoid a head-on collision, he crashes into a pole, kills the defender of his car, you're responsible. Will he be able to be tover you in bedin? No, you didn't do it. You didn't do it, but it was caused. It's your fault. Chayv b'din shamayim. This is not just semantics. Chayv b'din shamayim. This context is not just something spiritual. It means that you're really responsible for the damage that you caused. You didn't do it b'yadayim, but you're really responsible. He doesn't have to be mochel you before Yom Kippur. You have to pay for it. B'din shamayim. You have to pay. There's even discussion. Maybe what happens if he takes the money from you? Can he make his own psak din? But you certainly owe him the money. If you cause something, you have to stand behind it. The same is true legabe ritzicha. So the difference between the two cases is not the level of certainty that it carries with as per the result. The result is going to happen either way. The only question is whether you actually did it be a dime or whether it was only caused by you but you didn't do it be a dime. Now, there are cases where one could hear a certain level of doubt whether that's called be a dime or not. For instance, the Gemara says that if somebody ties somebody down and then in a place where there's a dam, releases the dam, the rush of water that the river lets forth drowns that person. If the water rushes at him and drowns him, that's a ma'aseh ritzicha. He's chayav. That's called a ma'aseh b'yadayim. But if the water only floods the area and eventually the water gathers and then the person drowns, again, the result is preordained. It's going to happen. But that's not considered a direct ma'aseh. It's only because something you set into play. It's called koach sheni. That koach sheni is not considered a ma'aseh b'yadayim. This is very relevant on Shabbat, for example. There's a whole discussion. If somebody opens up a sink, water coming out of the faucet makes more water go into the boiler. That means that the water that gets cooked in the boiler, whenever you turn on the sink, is a result of your opening up the sink. Is that a grama? In which case it would be mutter, because that's not what you're trying to do. Grama is always patur, is always not isur d'oraita, but one is not allowed to do it if that's his intent, but over here it's not your intent. Or we say no. Opening up the faucet, there's a direct rush of water, and that's considered cooking the water. Great poskim and Eretz Yisrael were machmir. It's not clear that it has to be that way, but Reb Shlomo Zalman, Reb Yoshev, Zichronam Bevracha, felt that that's considered a direct rush of water. However, let's say if one, sometimes the plumbing systems in a basement have to work with a pump, where the water is flushed down in the toilet, the water goes down. When the tank is full of wastewater, then there's an electric current that powers that water back into the system that takes it out of the house. That force of water is only after it goes down and sits there for a while. That's koach sheni. and that you'd be allowed to use, even though again, there's a certainty that when you keep on using the toilet, when you keep on flushing, it's going to produce that result. The certainty is not the issue. The issue is how direct is it in terms of your maaseh. So that discussion is a discussion that's, again, different areas in halacha. Certain medicines that produce certain physical results which are not mutter, that they produce, that somebody can't have children, where it's there's an issur d'oraita to take medicine that'll make one sterile. But if the medicine has to be taken, is it a direct ma'isa? Is it not a direct ma'isa? There are many examples of where this plays out in halacha. And some of the cases, the border is not so clear. Yehuda and Reuven seem to have been disputing whether putting Yosef into the bor, where that result is certain, that result is preordained, but the death of a person in a bor is a process. Is that called a direct ma'isa, putting him into a place where he's going to die, like putting him in direct ray where the sun's going to hit, or is that indirect? And that's not a ma'isa ritzicha, that's only a goren. Now again, going back to the existential question over here, we might postulate, maybe to explain this very difficult Ramban, that the brothers did not pass judgment on Yosef, that he was guilty on a clear level. In order for a person to be chayev misa, he has to do something which physically is an act of that avera. They understood, the brothers never paskin on him, that he had been morid b'malchut b'foel. As a matter of fact, it wasn't chayev misa on a simply physical level. Before Matan Torah, judgment could be rendered on a deeper, on a spiritual level, which means that they felt that this that Yosef was a morid b'malchut wasn't on a physical level, wasn't on a straightforward level, but it was on a deeper, more profound, more spiritual level. And because of that, the psak never was, or the psak was changed, that it shouldn't be carried out biadayim, because that maisa ritzicha is only justified when there is a maisa, that killing him is only justified when there is a physical avero which deserves a physical punishment. If it's an avero of a more spiritual nature, so it could be that they did not want to paskin on him that he should be killed in a earthly way. They were willing to paskin that they should cause his death, because that's already dinei shamayim. That's already where a person caused something, it's on his cheshbon bashamayim. It's on a spiritual level, he's responsible. It's not a physical responsibility. So their psak was consistent with the reality of what he did. They felt that he threatened the malchus of Klal Yisrael on a spiritual level, in which case he deserves death on a spiritual level. They were only willing to paskin on that level. Again, the machloket between Yehuda and Reuven was whether putting him in the bor fit with that idea. It's putting him in the bor because it's a place where people are for sure going to die. Is that called putting him directly in a situation of death, in which case that's a misa b'yadayim? Or it's only causing bidei shamayim, and bidei shamayim they had a right to kill him. At least in their estimation, we see it like the psak was right. Except that there was, sometimes you could figure out what the hashgacha pratit is. That's a person could delve and understand a little bit of the divine workings. And sometimes there's a divine plan that's so beyond your scope of imagination that you can't even get it, even if you're thinking spiritually. That's what happened. Later on, when the brothers were faced with the reality that Yosef was right and he became king in Mitzrayim, they were left speechless. They realized that there was a whole different level of divine protection, intervention, and plan and design that went beyond anything that they were able to imagine. They were left speechless. That's that Malchut Bet Yosef. How this is going to unfold at the end of time, the exact interplay Malchut of Ben Yosef and Malchut Ben David, we don't know. We hope very soon to find out. We should see the Mashiach and the illumination and the reconciliation of all members of Klal Yisrael, all the Shvatim together in Eretz Yisrael, b'mehirah v'yameinu amen.
This audio series has been brought to you by the Sephardic Halakha Center. The center is committed to advancing research and application of halakha in the Sephardic community nationwide. For a halachic consultation, monetary Bet Din services, to order this series or to sign up to receive the Sephardic Halakha Journal, or for all other information, please call 1-844-200-TSHC or email info@theshc.org to subscribe.